Hello, everyone. You're listening to the Art of Reinvention podcast show. This show focuses on helping you become the best version of yourself by producing thought-provoking and life-changing content. Here's your host, Teflon John.
All right, well, what's up, everybody? It's your boy, Teflon John, coming to you courtesy of the Art of Reinvention talk show and the I Am Teflon John brand. Today, I'm hyped because we're back. We're back with another episode. But more than that, I have a special guest. Me and his brother have been trying to link up for about, what now, 3 years? Yeah, COVID really shut down the building, and, you know, it really triggered, you know, some other things to happen. But now we're here, and I'd like to introduce my special guest, Nick George. So, Nick, why don't you go ahead and tell everybody who you are and what you do?
Awesome, awesome. Greetings, good people. This is Nick George. Some of y'all may know me as Nick George the Poet. I exist in the realms of education, public speaking, and facilitation. I'm an educator over at Dunbar Middle. Shout out to the poets.
Dunbar.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
But I also work a little bit helping other organizations and people kind of understand how to get their message out creatively and work within their teams to just do the best that they can do.
Okay. So now people know who Nick George is, right? So part of the Art of Reinvention show is, mm-hmm. is what we like to do is, you know, take a trip back, right? So we like to go back in the time machine.
Okay, time travel.
So who was Nick George? Like, how did you become educated? You mind bumping your mic up just a little bit? Yeah, so how and who was Nick George to become that educator? What made you get into education? Because I think nowadays that seems to be a task.
Who was Nick George? He's a beast. He's a goon. He's a. I actually tell my students a lot. I never wanted to be a teacher. I remember growing up in Jersey and what sixth grade was like for me at a Sacred Heart School in Vailsburg and what we did to our teachers. And I was like, nah, that could never. I could never. But, you know, life has a funny way of. Silencing and humbling you mm-hmm, a little bit. Mm-hmm. Over the past 10 years, I've been in a lot of different spaces, and all of them have involved working with people, but specifically working with young people. And, you know, I've found, as much as I've tried to run away from it, that's where a lot of my life's purpose is. I've been very, very fortunate and blessed to have the administrative team over at Dunbar Middle to work with me and, you know, put me in that kind of position to be able to work with kids in a way that I thought would help elevate them and prepare them for life after graduation, after eighth grade graduation.
Gotcha.
So, you know, it's been a cool ride, just journeying and getting there, however much I was resistant to it.
Yeah. So do you feel like, because I was just thinking about this and talking with one of my employees yesterday, is I think sometimes in the early part of our life, like we're connected to our destiny, but it's through a different way because we don't know what we're supposed to do. Purpose, right. Like, you know, for your purpose. How long did it take for you before you ran out of gas running from it?
Bruh, let me tell you something. When them bills come due, you will try anything. It's wild because my mom kept telling me, like, I see you being a teacher. Why don't you try teaching?
Yeah.
No. I don't got the patience for it. I don't got the energy for it. And I was at a point professionally where I was doing a lot of things on the side. I was doing a lot of things in the community and I was being very active. But in 10 years, you know, so much has changed. I got 3 kids now. My wife and I are trying to build our legacy. Uh-huh. And it was time to really, like, take a hard look in the mirror. Like, okay, what are you willing to do? Are you still willing to, like, let your ego stand in the way of what you mm-hmm. thought you weren't going to be good at? Or do you want to take a shot? You want to take advantage of this and build your way up. Fortunately, like I said, I had a lot of exposure in the field, so it wasn't completely new to me. And it was really just a matter of just like believing in myself despite what I thought I wanted to do.
Yeah. And I like to touch on that too, because I think sometimes we have the passion in our hearts, right? Mm-hmm. Sometimes we have the God-given ability and talent. And I think you have subconscious conversations with, you know, with yourself, like whether it be videography, like what I'm doing, or speaking or teaching. What is your advice to someone to get over that silent conversation and really take action to start digging, you know, matter, you know, whether that be, you know, hey, I feel like I'm called to be a pastor, teacher, mm-hmm. you know, I have a passion for sports. Like, what is your message?
I think it's a lot of different things, because I don't think there's any one lane. I think it's many mm-hmm. lanes in that highway. But I do think that a lot of it involves having honest conversations with yourself, because if there's a journey that you have to be on, you have to be really familiar with that terrain.
Yeah.
You got to be really familiar with that terrain. Some of us are bold enough, have enough bravado to just like jump into the wildness and be like, hey, whatever happens, happens.
Yep, yep.
That doesn't necessarily work for everybody. So I think it starts with having a really honest conversation with self and understanding your own parameters,
yeah.
your own boundary lines. I know what I'm willing to do in the classroom to engage a student.
Mm-hmm.
I know what I'm willing to do in a workshop to engage with this team. You know, I know where I'm trying to go. I know what I can do. And there's also that it's, while it's not one lane, you still have that journey behind you.
Yeah.
So you're kind of using what you have learned and what you yeah. have experienced. So it's not really gridlocked into the here and now.
Yeah.
You know, what did you see five exits back? What did you go through two interstates ago that
yeah.
prepared you for where you are now?
Exactly.
All of that can be used. And
exactly.
I use all of it.
Yeah.
I've embarrassed myself talking about the ways I've messed up.
Mm-hmm.
Talking to my eighth graders about, hey, yo, high school's coming.
Yeah.
I've done it. I've gone through it.
Yeah.
So using all of that is like a lesson. And it doesn't have to be limited to teaching. It doesn't mm-hmm. have to be limited to nonprofit work. It can expand
mm-hmm.
in any kind of industry. It all works for a purpose.
Yeah. And it's funny that you talk about, you know, like high school is coming, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because I remember being in middle school and you would hear like cliche stuff, but you always had that one teacher that was transparent.
Oh, my God.
And I think transparency, like using our platform, using our brand and using, mm-hmm. you know, that platform that becomes a stage that God has given us.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes transparency can really save someone's life and it can transition them,
mm-hmm.
I think, of what they're going after. Because, you know, like, again, we have these silent conversations in our head.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes we're thinking ourselves out of a great opportunity, out of a great idea. And I think once you get that transparency in someone who's done it,
mm-hmm.
you know, I think you can really help push them to the next level.
Yeah.
So have you had a full circle moment where you kind of felt like, oh man, this is why I'm teaching? Like, you got a student, you're working with them.
Man, you know, now that I've been officially teaching full time for a couple years, it happens frequently.
Mm-hmm.
When I was leading my nonprofit, there was a program that we did called Young Lit and Free. And I was so excited to get it off the ground because it took years to get it, you know, traction.
Yeah.
But before that fall, I believe, I was working in the school system in Appomattox as a day treatment clinician. And one of the kids I was working with, man, as I was working with him and I was looking at him like, yo,
mm-hmm.
this is who this program would be for.
Yeah.
This is who this thing could work for, because he's a brilliant kid.
Yeah.
This beautiful black boy that has so much potential and so much insight at his age. I'm like, yo, this is who this program would exist for.
Mm-hmm.
He could put out some amazing stuff in the world.
Yeah.
He can be a game changer. He could do this and that and the third. And I'm like, yeah, I don't know if he'll actually do it.
Yeah.
Right. But if there was like a model, because typically when you're developing a program,
mm-hmm.
you have the model individual, the prototype of who it's for.
Yeah.
He was that for me. Fast forward a couple of years and we're doing Young Lit and Free, working with Lynchburg Parks and Recreation. And I'm visiting one night because, you know, the team is making it run. And I walk in and he's in the audience.
Yeah.
This kid is in the audience. And I'm like, it was a weird, surreal moment where everything was happening around me, but I was watching it from like a bird's eye view. I was there, but I like my body was above it all. And I'm not ashamed to say, where's the camera at? I was crying tears. Of course I did this in the car after the fact.
Yeah.
But I'm like, bro, like it's you, like you're here, like you're seeing it. And he's just taller than me now.
Yeah.
And everything. And yeah. It was just a wild full circle moment that was, you know, when you're in the middle of a thing and you're in the process of doing the thing that you've been working so hard to do,
mm-hmm.
you don't always slow down long enough to really observe the impact, observe the
yep.
work, observe like, yo, thank God.
Yeah.
That was that moment.
Yeah.
That was one of those moments.
Yeah. And I, like I said, coaching, you know, young men, you know, mm-hmm. and I think once you coach, you're always a coach, right? And so it's a joy to me to see these guys getting Division I scholarships. You know, they're really, you know, having these high GPAs and mm-hmm. they're really becoming like model people, model students, and model athletes. So it's something to see, like you said, your work comes to fruition and someone actually executing, you know, because you can't make them do it.
Right.
You can have the desire where you want them to go to college, you want them to, you know, to want the best for themselves despite, you know, crazy home life or despite, you know, their neighborhood or wherever they are from an environment standpoint. But I think it does my heart good. Like you said, tears of joy, man, just seeing people make it out, you know.
Yeah.
And as far as you being a teacher, yeah, that's and like I said, I praise you because, like, just on social media, man, there's so much that you're seeing that I think you guys are combating, you know, home structure, you know, which I think since I've been in school, since anyone who's been in school, you kind of see that parents kind of let, you know, I'm sending my child to school. It's like a daycare sometimes. Mm-hmm. But I think social media.
Yeah.
You know, like when you're dealing with a lot of depression kids don't have, you know, you're dealing with a lot of facades. Kids are really trying to find who they are.
Yeah.
But you know, when we were in school, we didn't have that. So, right. Like, say if you got into a fight or something happened, it just happened. You would have to hear about it at lunch. Now they're sharing it, 100,000 views. How do you think social media affects the playground of how a kid develops now mentally?
I will say my suspicions for how hard teaching would be were correct. And then some. It ain't for the weak.
Yeah.
It ain't for the weak. I will say, though, that from my perspective, like, social media is a challenge.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really, it's a lot of the base parts of it are not that different from what it was when we were coming up. Like, people were shady still.
Yeah.
People would throw dirt on your name. People would challenge you still. You would still have questions about your identity. I'm navigating how to make my classroom a safe space for all my kids, black, white, trans, gay, straight, whatever. Like, I'm trying to make sure that if you walk into Mr. Nick's room, you're good. Like, you're not going to feel, you might feel pressure from not getting your work done and I'm going to get on your neck on it.
But yeah, yeah.
Like, you're not going to like feel that. And I think a lot of the things, I think we're at this age, you know, being middle age or approaching middle age, we're resistant to seeing the tides turn in that way, but a lot of it is really consistent. A lot of it is still what it was. It's not the same thing,
yeah.
But if you really pay attention to it, a lot of these kids, the battles that they face are not that dissimilar from what we faced. I had those questions.
Yeah.
I had those questions growing up. A lot of those questions still exist for me, right? But we kind of get like distance from it because they're over there and I'm grown and I'm an adult and blah, 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 blah.
Uh-huh.
You know, I had a conversation some time ago with a similar question. And I remember thinking to myself, there's room for humility in front of the classroom too. You know, like, these young people are still people and they see if social media has any influence in that, is opening up their eyes to what they do see.
Gotcha.
Like, they're still gatekeepers, but it's not a picket fence anymore. That joint's a fence, and they can see what's going on behind it.
Yeah.
So it's kind of on us. How do we handle that? Are we still trying to? We got to protect our kids. We got to protect our young people. But it's time to really be real with them and have safe spaces where they can brave spaces. I got to make sure I edit myself when I say that. Make sure we're creating brave spaces for them to navigate that world and have real talk about it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, when you say like the picket fence, the one thing I can say is that I think they know who's real.
Mm-hmm.
Like, as the adults have a side to play in it too, where they like, that's not you.
Yeah. They can smell it.
Yeah.
They can
smell whether it. You're a teacher, whether you're like an influencer in their neighborhood, whether you're, you know, coach, whether you're a family member, they know the difference between this picture I'm seeing or this life that you're trying to portray. And I think they're really good at picking that out early.
Very.
So they'll, like, you'll discredit yourself with a child or an individual thinking like, okay, I'm the adult, they're the child, but they see right through you.
Yeah.
You know, and I think social media is really not only doing that for them, but doing it for a lot of folks, you know. Like when they meet Nick George, when they meet Jonathan Smith, Teflon John, you know, out in public, they have a certain level of expectation.
Yep.
And if it's not one of the same, like, you know, you're pretty much done.
Yeah.
I.e. cancel culture.
And they're ready for it. They're ready to kind of disassemble what isn't real, what's fake. I don't take myself too seriously in the classroom. Yeah. I try to, you know, present with a sense of authority, but like we're here together.
Yep.
We're here together. Now I want to help. I feel like with what I've learned in the past 30 years can help, but we're doing this together,
mm-hmm.
you know? So let's work together. I'm gonna do more, my part. You gonna do your part. Let's make this thing shake and figure it out. And if I'm coming fake or incorrect, I know y'all are gonna call me on it. Somebody's gonna have their phone out just waiting,
yeah.
you know, to catch me slipping.
Uh-huh.
But if I catch you slipping, like, let's keep each other on the level.
Yeah, and hold each other accountable.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I do want to transition a little bit, you know, just hearing that, you know. So I know who Nick George was, right? And now that I know who he is now, I want to really talk about where he's going. Because what I hear is like him transitioning from, you know, nonprofit to kind of doing some speaking mm-hmm. and things. Could you kind of get into what you were doing with the nonprofit and how that's going to transition and what that looks like?
So for those who may not know, I started a nonprofit in 2013 called The Listening. And that was like the zenith of my life at that point.
Mm-hmm.
It felt like everything that I saw that wasn't working in education, that I saw that wasn't working in mental health, everything I saw that wasn't working in social justice in the community of Lynchburg at that time, this was my chance to really address it mm-hmm. and bring people together to focus on that. How would we do this? Well, I'm an artist. I'm a poet by nature. So let's use these arts to make something happen. Let's see if we can find a way. If you have a voice that wants to say more behind the mic with your guitar, with your pen, with them beats, with your feet, right? How can we make that happen? And for the next 9 going on 10 years, figured it out. Like, I don't know of a more uh-huh. pristine or professional way yeah. to say that. We figured it out. We developed it from just a regular open mic session that would meet to a nonprofit organization that facilitated spaces for people to really talk about things that connected to them. Now, I made a point to say that while it is open for everybody to come to, uh-huh. it's not going to be for everybody. It's going to be who it's for.
Mm-hmm.
And like I mentioned, those three things that were the focus, education, mental wellness, and social justice, really came to a head in 2020.
Mm-hmm.
And that was also when we had to figure out, all right, how do we move forward? For a lot of people, for a lot of organizations and institutions, they had to really look in the mirror and see what was the priority at that moment. We're talking about people's disparity and their inability to achieve the healthcare that they needed.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about people victimized and demonized by the police system, by the judicial system, by systems. You know, and while we were a very small organization, we did what we could to impact those things with our programming. We're talking about open mics. We're talking about showcase events. We're talking about workshops for young people, summer reading programming. We did what we could. And I saw that while we were growing, there was so much more room to grow.
Yeah.
But my season to lead that growth was coming to an end.
I got you.
So with that, you know, we had that hard conversation.
Yeah.
And I had to, you know, take the time to check myself and do what I could to bring my season to an end, to sunset my season,
mm-hmm.
but also prepare the next group of leaders to take over my departure. So I resigned in August of this year. And once again, tears,
yeah,
an abundance of tears.
Yeah.
So it was a good thing. It was a good thing. I think for me, it was a good thing. I think for the organization, to be able to do that. Historically, research shows that most organizations, when they still have their founder on board, they stick around for a while and then mm-hmm. they find a way to still be there. But it kind of stunts the growth of the organization.
Yeah,
and I didn't want this thing to be affected by a founder syndrome anymore that it already had been.
Yeah,
you know. So I thought it best. To make a clean break,
mm-hmm.
you know, I'm gonna forever be a supporter. I'm gonna forever be an ally or whatever. There's no sour grapes. There's no drama. There's no yeah. tea. Like, it's nothing like that. It's yeah. just growth.
Yeah, growth.
There's growth and there's a, pardon the pun, room for reinvention in all of it.
Yeah.
So that was one chapter, but with all that I had learned and experienced and been party to during those years is still in me.
Gotcha.
Right? I've been through that journey of figuring out, what is this about? What is this organization about?
Mm-hmm.
What's the beginning stage? What's the vision of it? What are we here for? I've made plenty of mistakes, right? With every piece of success, there's also a lesson learned behind it.
Yep.
And I don't want that to go to waste. Like I said, all of the journeys that I've been through before I'm on this road going this way, I've got to use it. So I'm going to use it in the classroom. A lot of it's not appropriate for middle school students.
Yeah.
So I've been working on developing my own brand to be able to go into other spaces and use those lessons for that. Sometimes it's in the form of a performance, right? Because I use my poetry in a myriad of ways, you know? So sometimes it may show up as a performance. Sometimes it may show up as a guided workshop where we talk about those hard things. What is your vision? What are the things that you want to do? What is the way to go about it? Sometimes it may look like a multi-day workshop. You know, I had the opportunity to work with a team in Cambridge where we got uncomfortable. And in that uncomfort, I think there's so much space for growth. You know, being in this room with all of these big, bold, bright thinkers.
Yeah.
Golly, that's magical. That was magical. I don't want to get carried away on any different roads here because I know you asked a specific question. But yeah, I've been on an amazing journey. I don't think I'm done yet. So, you know, I'm on this next level, outside of the classroom. I'm trying to use the skills and abilities that I have within me to encourage people, to empower people to do things, to find creative solutions to different problems. There's a world out there that we can do a lot to heal, to help. I think we can do a lot better together. If we can find an inclusive way to achieve what we're after, let's get it.
Yeah, that's amazing, man. Listening to that. I am curious because I think when we have these ideas, right, like, you know, with my brand and like other stuff I'm doing, I think I've always wondered that, like, you look at Deion Sanders at, you know, Jackson State, and, you know, you're looking at college football, all these coaches are leaving, or you see like people at a, you know, at your workforce, they transition, right? I'm curious to see how, like, what that process was, letting go, knowing, okay, this is the thought I had, you know, I'm watching it grow, but now it's time for me to pivot and transition on. Like, how was that, you know, taking something, because that pretty much is your baby, because you're feeding it. It came from here, right? How was that thought process where you're like, you know what, I've created this, I feel comfortable with these people, taking over, now I'm going to start something else?
I think that's one of those multi-layered things. I hear that a lot, that, you know, it's your baby. And I'm making peace with that. I think a part of it that's weird for me is the fact that I actually have babies that I literally made, you know? And that's what's different from when this thing began. Like in 2013, I was a newlywed. I'm wet behind the ears. I got enough nerve to try something, but not enough experience to know how it can go wrong. Like, it's just, you know, trying it. I remember bringing it to my wife and I was like, hey, yo, I got this idea, right? You remember the thing that we were doing for a couple times? Yeah, I was thinking, like, what if I actually really went for it? And she was like, I don't remember what she was doing, but it was like, yeah, like, go ahead, let's get it. And, you know, that encouragement was great. And she was the first person that lent the strength of that encouragement, but she was not the only one, you know, because there's a whole village of supporters that also believed in that. And I think when it came time to transition, having that sense that, like, here's the time, here's the space that if you really believe in the mission, if you really believe that the performing arts can make, engage, change, and save lives, then it shouldn't matter who's in front of the room talking that talk. If you believe in it,
you're
going to make it happen, right? I can't really speak on Deion Sanders because that's a loaded situation.
Loaded question.
That's a loaded situation. That's a tough situation. So, you know, Godspeed to him and the communities that he's been a part of and heading into. But I don't think it's just one thing. I think change is going to have tension. Yeah. Change is going to be a challenge.
Yep.
I shout out to the AK, the new executive directors of The Listening, but I let them know some people are not going to like this transition, are not going to trust the transition. They're not going to know what to make of it. But the people who are still there, that's your foundation to make something dope with.
Yeah.
The people who see it for what it is, not who, but for what it is. Like you've experienced your life changed with dance. You've seen people's lives saved because of a word spoken from an MC. Those are the folks that you want with you still.
Yeah.
Right? All the other stuff is just flash and flare. All the other stuff is stuff we've learned over the years on how to make things, you know, feel that much more polished, that much more shiny. But, you know, I'm looking forward to seeing what they do.
Yeah.
And I'm good with however it turns out.
Got you. Yeah, and that's it's amazing because I often think, you know, when I look at like Steve Harvey, I look at Kevin Hart and these guys, and I'm pretty sure there are things they started that they transition on. Because to me, I think that's the ultimate goal. I don't think it's like your goal to keep, you know, to stay with an idea from start to finish when if it's an overall branding thing, right, that you're trying to make impact.
Well, it was.
That could branch off.
No, I'll be honest with you. I was prepared to do this thing to my grave.
Mm.
I was prepared for this to be like my lasting legacy. That was how like I was in it. I was in it. There was a point where that focus became unhealthy though, where the work that I was doing to try to build this thing up became more self-focused, more about what I can do and how I'm gonna make it happen. To the point where I started to witness my relationship suffer, my health, right? Like I'm seeing all these things change. I remember one night I was, and what's wild about the nonprofit space, especially when you're a startup and you're not connected to like old money or anything like that, you're really just desperate for the chance.
Yeah.
So you'll go to 10 different functions, 10 different networking events, 10 different marketing, 10 different things. For just one of them to really like be the thing that helps your organization make it to the next quarter, make it to the next year, make it to the next fundraising thing. And I was going to another one and my daughter, she at the time, I think she was maybe 3 or 4, and she was asking me, I'm getting my jacket on and I'm getting ready to go. She's like, all right, I'm about to leave, saying bye, baby. And she was like, daddy, where you going? And I'm like, oh, I got a work thing. I got to get some work done.
Mm-hmm.
She stopped and looked, I don't like it when you have to go to work. And that was mad simple, but that joy caught me right here.
Yeah.
That caught me right here. In the multiverse of this experience, this is the beginning of like a whole different story arc. That would be the beginning of the end for me because like feeling how so much of it was pulling me away and taking away, taking more of my resources away from my first focus, which is my family, you know? And, you know, shout out to Steve Harvey, shout out to Kevin Hart, shout out to all of these other individuals who were able to make those things move in a way for them. But I had to let that mindset go of this is gonna be my thing. I had to let that go. I had to shift everything. And like, I challenged anyone to actually like check our trend, but there was a point where I tried my best to not have my face be a part of any of our marketing. I removed myself as much as I could from the face of the marketing of it and tried to center it on our volunteers, our interns, you know, our board, trying to focus it on the people doing the work than just the personality associated with it. Because, you know, there's a part of imposter syndrome that I'm sure is in there.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not why. That's not supposed to be why.
Yeah.
I was at a point like trying to pull friends, like I was trying to make this thing my friend group.
Yeah.
And that would be cool.
Mm-hmm.
In the perfect world, that would be cool. But at my position of leadership, at my position of influence, like, nah, buddy.
Yeah.
Nah, you're not here to make friends. Like, that's great, but this is not that.
Can't bleed the two.
Yeah, you can't. You got to separate it.
Yeah.
And I think that was how it was around that time where I had to shift it away from being about my brand and also being able to have my brand separate from this thing, you know, because that's a whole other section of who is slash was Nick George. Because outside of that, outside of the classroom, I had a whole other section of things that I was working on. So it was important for me, as much as I wanted to at first, it was important for me to divide the two.
Got you. Do you feel that when you're starting to do stuff, you know, like, when you're transitioning from the listening to, okay, now he's doing something different, or when you started, now he wants to do this, and you got a, you know, a million other things. Because I'm often, some people, you know, are often criticized for their attempts, you know. And I think being a creative, that's something that, you know, that we'll battle with. Do you find it hard telling your ideas or your thoughts to a lot of people? You keep it with your wife? Or, because what I've learned is, like, sometimes I don't need to hear that negativity. Just like your that incident with your daughter can be the beginning to the end. That one negative comment, right, can be a seed sown that now when you're on this journey, you may reach this runt, and now that seed plays in your head. Like, I told you it would be harder. How do you go about that? Are you more of like the high blood pressure, I'm gonna work in silence and kill it? Or are you more like, yeah, this is what I'm doing and this is what I'm going after?
Yeah, I dibble and dabble. I gotta be honest, man. I dibble and dabble because there's a part of me that thrives in community.
Yeah.
Right? I think that's the artist part of me that thrives in community. I love, if you know anything about me, I love collectives of creatives. So when you talk about the Harlem Renaissance of the 1920s and 30s, we talk about the Black Arts Movement of the 60s and 70s, we talk about the Soulquarians of the 90s. Like, I'm attracted to movements of people being in a space, vibing off each other's energy and taking it to another level. Like, I'm listening to a podcast, No Skips, where they're like going over albums, like legendary albums, and they're talking about Wu-Tang and the Return of 36 Chainz. Like, yo.
Yeah.
What in the Voltron were these brothers on? Like, they were they were just united in this crazy way. And there's that piece of me that's always attracted to being refined by the people I'm around and the people I'm with.
Yeah.
Then there's the other side of me that I really don't like to talk a lot of unnecessary talk. I may ask like one or two or three people, like, hey, yo, how does this look? How does this sound? But I would rather, when I got something to actually say, that's when you hear from me, right? I don't want to add to the noise.
Yeah,
like, exactly. You were talking about social media. Like, there's a lot of noise. That's one of the things I'm trying to work with my kids on, with my students on. There's a lot of noise out there. You got to be selective about what you let in.
Yeah.
I don't want to add to the noise. I might have a dumb idea, like, why hasn't anybody made a Netflix anime special about Wu-Tang Clan? Yeah. That would kill. Don't dope, take that. Man. I'm gonna get that copywritten. But that would be amazing.
Yeah,
I might throw that up, right? But if I'm actually legit working on something, I'm not gonna just broadcast that for the sake of broadcasting and content. I don't know how to respond to that. Siri, shush. Sorry, I had a guest appearance from Siri.
But it's you know, and it feels good to be able to talk to other creatives, you know, because I think there's certain things, certain elements, it's a certain way of thinking, you know, and certain understanding that two people would have, that the average person that's more of an executor, you know. But I think creative, like, we create what other people will go and do. Like, we create, and to be real, I think, like, without creatives, like, you know, there's no jobs, you know. And so I think, well, what you're trying to do, what I'm trying to do, eventually we can help employ people.
Yeah.
I remember watching, there was the Pivot podcast, Kevin Hart. And I didn't know, man, like, he said he employed so many, his brand from just, you know, you think about this dude starting comedy to where he had a thought and an idea and it branched off to Heartbeat Productions. And, you know, God knows, you know, whatever else he has, but he said he's employed so many families, you know. And I'm pretty sure through, you know, the employment, through the tutelage and, you know, like the mentorship, like, he's creating other people that will create brands that will create other opportunities. And that's the thing, I think, where people kind of put us in this box of, like, artists.
Yeah.
You know, they don't understand that it is something behind that. I was watching the Nicki and Moose podcast, and they were going over, like, I think this dude, like, Jordans or whatever.
Yeah.
Then there's another guy that, like, paintings, and it was some person was criticizing, like, hey, man, you're charging too much. And he was like, you can't put a price on someone else's art, someone else's vision. Like, someone else sees the value in that. Like, keep the communication with those folks.
Yeah.
Don't devalue your thoughts and ideas because someone is basing what you produce on what's in their pocket.
Right.
You know what I mean? And so I think I try to keep that in mind. And then now going into this new season of my life and this new season of creating, what I'm learning is to let go of what people say or think.
Yeah.
Just let them think. Like, you you know, Sally in Wyoming on Facebook or user 109 or whatever. You have, you know, the right to your, you know, to your opinion of me. Mm-hmm. That doesn't have to be my reality. Mm-hmm. And I don't, and it doesn't have to affect what I create and how I do what I do.
It's hard though. It's hard because eternal shout out to Miss Erica Badu, but she spoke for all of us when she said, I'm an artist and I'm sensitive about my ish.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
We make for a reason. We don't we don't make for the money.
Yeah.
We don't make for the profit. We're not we're not focused on that. Now, we live in a capitalist society that for better or for worse has affected how we create.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been able to kind of establish a line of demarcation in myself where I may know how to create something that may serve a group of people, but I need some space to make for myself.
Got you.
Right?
I agree.
There's got to be a separation there.
I agree.
There was a time where they were one and the same because I didn't understand that boundary. I didn't know how to do that. I was just doing. Because it starts out from a pure place. Maybe it's from healing. Maybe it's from exploration. Mm-hmm. Maybe for establishment. But for whatever that is, you got to hold on to that and protect it and hold it somewhere separate from what you're using as a lifestyle.
Yep.
Because there's so, you know, this community has so many artists, so many amazing artists. But I've always had an inner challenge with the language being about how to make money from it. It's an important conversation to have.
Yeah.
It's a necessary conversation to have. But we're skipping the conversation about how do we establish these boundaries to protect our artists. I'm going to sound like the old guy. From selling out.
Exactly. Yeah, man. It's hard.
It's hard. It's You're trying line. To eat. You're it's trying to live. Line. But how do you protect yourself from just doing the shuck and jive, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
When you're trying to eat.
Yeah, and I think that's a very, you know, like you said, loaded question because I think about it all the time. There were opportunities when I first started doing this where I was approached by a few individuals, you know, that to me, it came off like you want to pervert my vision to get out some type of agenda, right? Mm-hmm. Now, keep in mind that, you know, as creatives, you know, Nick George, you know, myself, people that you're seeing on YouTube, like it takes money.
Yeah.
And we're coming out of our pockets. It's not like we have a brand deal and, you know, someone's just saying, go buy this, pick this. Like, so you're really not seeing a profit for a while. So you're working off passion.
Yeah.
And so you develop this level of integrity, what you're trying to do, why you're creating content. You're trying to figure out who are you as a creative? Who are you as a person? And at the same time, you're trying to keep it real by making impact. But I think that is like hard of like what line do you draw with these brand deals and everything,
right?
To where you wouldn't let someone come in and change the trajectory of like that vision.
Yeah.
Just to say, okay, now I got to the bag.
Do you remember, and this was back in the day, the Gap had commercials going crazy.
Yeah, yeah, I remember, yeah, yeah.
And they, you know, hip hop was starting to blow up. So they said, hey, yo, we got an idea. Let's get this fella, LL Cool J.
LL, yeah, I remember he was killing him.
And you remember when he shouted out FUBU in the Gap commercial?
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah, yeah,
yo,
yeah, yeah.
That is such a great example, I think, of, yeah, you're going to cut the check, and I'm going to use my art for this.
Yeah.
But there's a heart behind it that I actually am about, that I'm keeping for myself.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
You can have this. You can have this commercial.
Yep.
But this FUBU part that you don't even really know about, that I really do believe in. Yo, he inceptioned the heck out of that joint.
Yeah. Man. Yeah, man, because it's like, and I think what most people don't realize, and so like part of my brand, like this, and this part of it is right, really highlighting people, right? So there is a brand where I'm doing motivational stuff. So it's me, you know, I'm the face of it and I'm the voice of it. But at this point, I'm highlighting other people, right? So what I wanted to do is create a stage. My platform becomes a stage for you to stand on. Do your thing.
Yeah.
You know, it's all about you. It's less about me and this. But I think once that stage is built, that's your safe space, right? And I think that with social media, it's different. Like if we had to go to ABC,
right?
Like Nick George, you know, I have this contract with ABC. I can't say this. I can't say that. I can't say this. I can't say that.
Right.
You can't wear this. Can't wear that. I'm sponsored by this. We got to do that. I got to put this on at a certain time. But we're not here because now we have distribution through TikTok,
right?
Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. And right now, where there's some level of freedom of speech, I think that's how we keep it real But I think the educational part has to take place on, you know, how brand deals are made, how you're making money on YouTube and these platforms. Because what can then happen is then you can be used, and like bringing up Wu-Tang, and man, it's like one of my favorite rap groups. But if you watch some of those like TLC, Wu-Tang, Five Heartbeats, and you see where people didn't know the contract.
Yeah.
It's like going to work and you don't know if you get paid every 2 weeks, every week.
Right.
How much do I make an hour? So I think with this, people, a brand deal can come and say, okay, Rode, you know, John has X amount of followers. So basically they want access to that.
Right.
I think educating yourself and putting yourself in the best position, you can take advantage of that and still have your level of integrity. But I think what happens is when people don't know and you don't set the standard values first,
right?
That's when I think you're hit with this, you're hit with a loaded question you have to answer between a certain amount of time, and it's life-changing. Like the answer to that question is going to be life-changing.
Yeah,
so I think it's knowing that, constantly having that conversation, constantly knowing when your brand is changing, when those views start. Like, don't wait until they come.
You know what I'm saying? A lot of these parts of yourself before that time comes. I had to really take it on the chin at a certain point. Going back to my time with the nonprofit, we were doing an event, and I'll always remember this. We were doing an event that the heart of it was to be a safe, brave space. The theme of the night was sanctuary, and we held it in the Old City Cemetery in Lynchburg. And I thought this was a nice, you know, neutral location. It's not really, it's like a church, but not really a church. And if it is, we're going to reimagine the space as a symbol of safety for everybody. And there's, you know, there's so many different communities in our city. There's like, each one of them are kind of like hiding from what I've seen. You know, they're kind of hiding or protecting themselves. And at one point, you know, a well-meaning pastor came up, and he was really talking to the crowd about Christ and about the safety in God and how there's sanctuary there. And I remember hearing after the, I didn't think anything of it in the moment, but I heard after the fact how many members of the queer community who were there felt preached down to, almost targeted. And the way that hurt, I had to make a decision in my head. You know, I call myself a believer, but am I willing to forsake people who are trying to come somewhere who they just want to be safe? Like, you don't have to believe what I believe, but if you want to be safe, shouldn't you be allowed to feel that? So what am I willing to do to show that, yeah, you can be safe here, and I'm going to do what I can to let you know that I can't make you come in. I'm not going to play the game and queer bait, but how do I make sure that we as an organization show up authentically? And if you decide to never come again, cool. But there are others out there who still may need a space to show up in. How do I do that? How do I do that? How do I learn this thing? Because I don't know all about it.
Yeah.
I don't know all about it. So how do I learn? How do I continue to mold the idea of what I thought I knew? I thought he was fine.
Yeah.
I thought this, like, hey, yeah, man, Cole, do your thing.
Yeah.
I had to relearn what proselytizing is. I had to learn about those danger spots for queer folk, for trans folk, for ace folk to, like, I'm good. I'm okay. I'm not on high alert.
Yeah.
Like, I'm good here. Nobody's targeting me. Nobody's going to pigeonhole me. I'm not going to be in a, like, how do I do that?
Yeah.
You know, and that, and that's a major ego shot. Cause like I said, I thought everything was sweet. I thought everything was straight, but I'm cisgendered, right? Like, I'm already from a hetero mindset. So of course I'm not looking for those things.
Gotcha.
You know, so there had to be a whole shift and a whole redefining of those lines for me.
Yeah. That makes sense, because I think now it's all about the perspective. You know what I'm saying? And like, you know, being married, you got to shift it all the time.
All the time. What?
Know, having kids, you got to shift it. So, and then like I said, being in leadership, you got to shift it too, because what you said may not be how it was, you know, the received or perceived by another person.
Yeah.
And that's where I think we get into like censorship and all this stuff that you're seeing with Kanye and these guys now. And I think that it's a, you know, we're getting to a different type of world when it comes to freedom of speech. You know, I think the social media online, and going back to, like you said, with the, you know, with the money and like the branding, it's a lot that comes with that.
Yeah.
You know, you kind of lose some of yourself depending on what you're going. You really got to know ethnic background, religion, you know, background of who's funding you, you know, because without doing that research, you could be having a conversation that we think, oh, we're good.
Right.
But we didn't know how that feels for this community, that community.
Right.
And if you see it, sometimes your own community, you know, where we may say something or agree, and then it causes an uproar, you know. So it's like you really have to be on guard, you know, when you're doing stuff. And I think that's where you, what I call, I remember when I first started doing videos, right? I wasn't thinking anything of them. Just hitting the record button, putting them out, not trying to think too much before I delete them. One of my friends like, man, you really putting yourself out there, man. Like, I respect that, but I didn't know what that meant.
Yeah.
I just thought he meant putting the videos out, but he's like, you putting yourself out because what you say, people hold on to.
Right.
And all it takes is them to take one thing, a certain route.
That's all it takes.
And the implications could be catastrophic. You know what I mean? But yeah, so I like to shift the conversation to, you know, by you being the type of brother, man, to work around kids and, you know, using, you know, spoken word and using, you know, the listening back then and now where you're transitioning to, did you say some speaking?
Right, yeah, yeah. Man, I'll never stop shouting out the community that made it okay for me to try, but also, you know, opened itself up, you know, for me to continue to learn. And I've been able to use these skills to work with different people over the country to, one, show what spoken word can do. It's almost criminal how much it's overlooked.
Mm-hmm.
And we've talked a little bit about just how artists fit into this space. And I think it's high time that we really regard poetry as less of a punchline and more of like an aid in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
Because if you really look throughout history, artists really are the ones that keep a pulse on where the culture is, where the community is.
Yeah.
And if I'm going to call myself an artist, right, I'm honored to be able to use this gift to illuminate certain truths to different communities and spaces. Never in a million years would I have thought that kid 20 years ago just writing furiously in his notebook would be at a psychology conference, right? Or some like at Harvard, like what?
Yeah.
Like what? Like I don't know. I'm not gonna question it. Thank you, God.
But you have to make room for you.
Listen, it's been crazy. It's been crazy. But I want to continue to refine and learn and hold respect for that craft. And also, not just in the performance side of it, right? There's a lot on the other side. So that's where holding spaces for groups to have conversations and help lead them in those conversations is another direction where I'm wanting to go in. And I've been able to do that. This past year has been crazy. 2022 has been wild. And there's a lot going on in 2023 that I can't really talk too much about just yet. But
we gotta get you back on though.
Yeah, man.
You can't talk about it.
I can't talk about it just yet.
We gotta get you back on.
But 2023 has me continuing to evolve, you know, in myself. There's a lot of young Nick that is healing throughout this process.
Yeah.
There's a lot of, you know, that kid from Newark that is growing to be more comfortable with himself throughout all of this. So there's a bit of give and take. I think Andre 3000 said it in one of his songs where, you know, if I don't make these beats to make y'all dance, then I can't eat. So we kind of need each other.
Yeah.
You know, we kind of need each other. And I feel that relationship with the different institutions that I've worked with, different campuses and universities that I've been able to work with. So, you know, it's it is truly an evolution. It's truly an evolution. But this time around, I'm hoping to be healthier with the process and hopefully do something that my kids will be like, hey, that's my dad.
Okay. That's what's up, man. So I think as we bring things to a close, you know, what I would like for you to do is, you know, look into your camera and there's someone out there, you know, that wants to do what we're doing, that wants to really push the envelope. There's someone out there that maybe, you know, through that runt that you and I have been, you know, through whatever, you know, and they're thinking about giving up. What is your advice speaking directly to them? How do they push through? And what is your message to the masses?
That's a good way to phrase that. If you're thinking about quitting and just giving up whatever your journey is on, listen to that voice. Listen to what your body is telling you, because this hustle and grind culture is hurting us in a lot of ways. Now, you are due your success. It's worth it for you to be successful. But if your body is hurting under that pressure, listen to it and heal. Take some time to really talk to yourself and know yourself, so that way when you do get back to it, you're in a healthier place and success is that much closer to your grasp. I'm not going to sit over here and tell you, oh, nah, put that to the side and positivity, grind, grind, grind. Like, nah, we got too many people hurt mentally and physically and spiritually and emotionally under this whole guise of hustle and grind. If you're hurt and you're tired, listen to that. Heal, so that way when you get back at it, if you choose to get back at it, you're at a better place, because we need you. But more than needing you producing everything, we need you well. You need you well. So yeah, that's the mental health part of me.
Gotcha, man. That was we appreciate it, man. You know, the Art of Reinvention show, the I Am Teflon John brand, we want to get you back.
Yeah, man.
Where you can talk about what's in store for 2023. And just so you guys know, you know, Teflon Radio is live. We haven't did the official release, but we're going to get Nick George back, you know, to hopefully bless us with some, you know, spoken word poetry, maybe even over a beat or two, you know what I'm saying? so we can see what he can do. Yeah, so we definitely want to get him back, but we're going to have him back on the Art of Reinvention, so that, you know, as 2023 comes and he's, you know, able to talk about that way we can support this young brother and we can really help him get to where he's going. Because what he's going to do through his brand is create more opportunities for us. But that's all. I appreciate you guys for supporting this episode. And as I always say, one love, but you got to remember it's your choice to be blessed. Hey, what's up? It's your boy Teflon John, and I would like to personally thank you for listening to this episode of the Art of Reinvention podcast show. Follow us on social media on TikTok at the Reinvention Podcast, YouTube at the Art of Reinvention Talk Show, and Instagram at the Art of Reinvention Podcast. And you can hit us up at www.teflonjohn.com. That's John spelled J-O-H-N for all motivational content in Teflon Radio. And again, as I always say, one love, but it's your choice to be blessed.